All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're tackling a case, People v. Cummings, that really digs into the nitty-gritty of evidence. It's all about hearsay, you know, that legal maze, and specifically this thing called the excited utterance exception. We're going to see how a concept that, frankly, might seem kind of boring in the textbooks can actually blow up into huge real-world drama and, you know, really change the outcome of the trial.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this case, it's like the perfect example of how just a random comment, something shouted out, can end up causing this whole legal earthquake. And at the center of it all, what we've got is, well, it's a 911 call, right? Someone yells out, yo, it was Twenek, man. Boom. And that statement, it gets admitted as an excited utterance. And that, let me tell you, that completely flipped the script in the trial and then led to appeals and more appeals. So this is, you know, like a must know for anyone who wants to really get evidence law. You got to understand why even these like totally spontaneous sounding things have to be looked at so closely under the rules of evidence.
So for everyone listening who maybe isn't familiar with this case, let's like set the scene. Like what even happened that got us to this whole legal mess?
Okay, so picture this. March 19th, 2012. We've got a shooting. Three people get hit. The shooter takes off in like a silver minivan. And then not long after that 911 call comes in, someone's clearly like freaking out. And that's when they say it, you know, yo, it was Twenek, man.
So that statement, that name drop, that's the big deal here, right? What happened when this case went to court the first time?
Well, the first judge, they actually said, nope, that 911 statement, can't use it. Interesting thing is though, the jury, they couldn't agree on a verdict. They deadlocked, which means mistrial. They basically had to start all over again. So it's like hitting reset, any rulings from before, on hold until there's a new jury.
You'd think that's a clean slate, you know, fresh start, but sounds like it got complicated.
Oh, it definitely did. So round two, we get a new judge, right? And this judge, initially, they were on the same page, you know, that 911 call, out. But then here's the twist. The judge gets sick, has to step down.
Let's talk about a shakeup. So we've got judge number three now stepping in. What did they decide about this whole 9/11 drama?
All right, so the prosecution, they see their chance, right? New judge. Maybe a new perspective. And they push again to get that statement in. This time, the judge says yes. Yo, it was Twenek, man. It's in. Admissible as an excited utterance.
Wow. And how did that change things for Cummings in the trial? What happened?
With that statement now in play, things shifted. Jury found Cummings guilty on some of the assault charges, but there's another layer. They actually acquitted him on the attempted murder charges.
So not a complete slam dunk then. And I bet the defense didn't just like sit back and take that right. What were their big arguments when they appealed?
Oh, they came out swinging for sure. Two main punches. First, they argued this legal thing called the law of the case doctrine should have stopped that third judge from basically overruling what the second judge had said about the 911 call. Like a decision was made, stick with it. Second, and this is the core of it, they argued that the statement didn't actually fit what's needed for an excited utterance. It shouldn't have been evidence in the first place.
Okay, let's break those down. Starting with that first one, law of the case. What's that all about?
It's a really important principle for consistency in court proceedings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like, say a referee makes a call in the first half of a game, and then in the second half, they just like randomly change their mind about that same play. Doesn't make sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
It undermines the whole idea of fair play. Law of the case is kind of similar. Once a court decides on a particular legal point in a case, that ruling should generally stand, even if a different judge takes over later. It helps make sure the legal process is predictable and efficient.
So why didn't this doctrine apply in Cummings? A judge had already said no to the 911 call, right?
That's where it gets tricky, right? See, the Court of Appeals said that because there was a mistrial, it was kind of like hitting a giant reset button on the whole case. The first trial never reached a proper conclusion. And super importantly, a jury hadn't even been picked yet for that second trial when the third judge changed the ruling. That means the law of the case doctrine didn't lock things in place yet, not at that stage. Plus, they said Cummings wasn't really harmed because the new judge decided this before the jury was in the picture.
So a mistrial throws some of those earlier decisions up in the air. That's a really good point. But let's dig into the real meat of this case, you know, the excited utterance exception. What exactly is it, and why was there so much fighting over it?
Okay, so before we even get to excited utterance, we got to talk about hearsay. Hearsay is like the Voldemort of legal evidence. It's an out-of-court statement, someone saying something not under oath that you're trying to use in court to prove whatever that statement was saying is actually true, and it's generally a big no-no. Why? Because the person who said it wasn't under oath didn't face cross-examination. We don't know if it's reliable, but of course, there are exceptions, times when even hearsay is considered okay, and that's where the excited utterance comes in.
Okay, and I get why cross-examination is so important, right? You got to be able to test what a witness is saying, see if it holds up. So what makes an excited utterance supposedly more trustworthy? Like, why does it get a pass?
The idea is this. When something totally shocking happens and you react in the heat of that moment, you're less likely to, you know, cook up a lie or twist things. It's spontaneous, raw, and that makes it, in theory, more reliable. To qualify, a statement's usually going to tick a few boxes, like four key things.
Let's hear them. What makes a statement an excited utterance?
First off, there has to be a startling event, something that would genuinely shock or excite a person. Second, the statement itself has to be about that event, relating to what just happened. Third, the person making the statement, they got to still be under the influence of that event. Like, they're still caught up in the moment, you know, adrenaline pumping. And then the fourth thing, which is super important, especially for Cummings, is this. The person who's speaking, they have to have actually seen what they're talking about.
Ah, so they can't just be repeating gossip. They got to have witnessed it firsthand.
Exactly. You nailed it. That's where the prosecution and Cummings ran into trouble. The Court of Appeals, they zoomed in on that fourth requirement, personal observation, and they said straight up there was zero evidence that the person on that 911 call actually saw the shooting.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? Just because you're yelling something on a 911 call doesn't mean you saw what went down. You could be like repeating what someone else told you. It's hearsay on top of hearsay.
Totally. The court was like, look, that statement, it was Twenak. It doesn't tell us anything about whether the caller actually knew what they were talking about. Maybe someone else told them that. That key link, the direct observation, it just wasn't there.
So even though it's a super tense situation, a 911 call right after a shooting, it wasn't enough because we don't know if the person was actually there. They might have just heard it from someone else.
Exactly. And that's the subtle but really important distinction here. The first three things, the spontaneity, the excitement, they tell us that the statement probably isn't a calculated lie. But the fourth one, personal observation, that goes to whether they actually know what they're saying based on what they saw or heard themselves. It's about the foundation of their knowledge.
Okay, so the appeals court said letting that 911 call in was a mistake. But a mistake doesn't automatically mean someone goes free, right? That's where we get to this whole idea of harmless error. Can you explain that for our listeners? Like, what does it actually mean?
So harmless error review, it's what happens when an appeals court finds that, yeah, something went wrong in the trial, maybe evidence got admitted that shouldn't have, or instructions to the jury were messed up. They have to then figure out if that error was so bad that it might have actually changed the jury's decision. If they say, look, this error, it's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, meaning it wouldn't have swayed the jury anyway, then the conviction might still stand.
Gotcha. So in Cummings, did the Court of Appeals think that 911 call being admitted was harmless? Like, did they say, no big deal, it didn't really affect anything?
Nope, not at all. They were very clear, that error. Not harmless. They went through all the other evidence the prosecution had against Cummings piece by piece.
And what was that evidence? Why did they say it wasn't enough without that 911 call?
All right, so here's what they had. They found Cummings' fingerprint on the passenger door of the minivan that was supposedly used in the getaway. There was cell phone data putting him in the general area of the shooting around when it happened. And some testimony said that Cummings had left the state right after the shooting and then came back a few days later.
Okay, that's definitely suspicious, but not exactly like a smoking gun.
And that's exactly what the court said. That fingerprint on the minivan. It showed he'd touched the car, sure. But that doesn't mean he was driving it or even there during the shooting. The cell phone data gave a general location, not pinpointing him at the exact spot. And most importantly, no one who saw the shooting, no eyewitnesses, pointed to Cummings and said, that's the guy. And the weapon never found.
So without that 911 call saying it was Twanek, the whole case gets a lot weaker. It's crazy how much that one statement really changed things, you know, makes you realize how important these evidence rules are to getting the truth.
Oh, absolutely. The Court of Appeals was super clear about that. They said that 911 statement that, yo, it was Twanek, man. That was the only direct evidence tying Cummings to the shooting. Everything else, circumstantial. It suggested a connection, maybe, but it didn't prove he actually did it. And because of that, they said it was totally possible that the jury would have come to a different verdict without hearing that 911 call. That one statement was the linchpin.
This case really highlights for you how powerful even a tiny piece of evidence can be, especially when it comes to naming a suspect, right? Now, there was also a concurring opinion in this case, wasn't there? One of the judges, Justice Rivera, she had some interesting thoughts about the excited utterance exception itself.
You're right. Justice Rivera's opinion, it brings up some really big picture questions, stuff for all you future lawyers to really think about. So she agreed with the majority, you know, overturning the conviction. But she went a step further and questioned whether the whole excited utterance idea even holds up anymore, given what we know now about psychology and how the brain works.
Yeah, that's fascinating. What were her concerns?
She pointed out that we understand memory so much better than we used to. And stress. It doesn't always make you more truthful, like the classic idea behind the excited utterance suggests. Research actually shows that stress can mess with your memory. Make it less accurate, not more. That really throws the whole basis of the excited utterance exception into question, you know? Like, is a statement made under stress actually that reliable?
So the idea that's been used in law for ages, it might be totally wrong based on what we're learning about the brain.
Exactly. It's a huge point. However, Justice Rivera also said, look, in this specific case, Cummings' lawyers didn't attack the entire excited utterance exception itself. They just said it didn't apply here. So the court had to follow the usual rules. But she definitely put it out there. This is something we need to keep examining.
Yeah, like a warning flag for the future. Okay, so the big takeaway from People v. Cummings, it seems like this. If you're going to use the excited utterance exception, you absolutely need to show that the person saw what they're talking about. It's not enough that they're, you know, freaking out and saying stuff.
Yeah.
They got to have witnessed it with their own eyes.
Absolutely. Just blurting something out in the heat of the moment doesn't cut it. There has to be a solid reason to believe that what they're saying is based on what they actually saw or experienced. If you don't have that, it's just unreliable hearsay.
And this also shows us why the right to cross-examine witnesses is so important. You can't just let some anonymous statement in without being able to question the person who said it. It takes away the defendant's chance to fight back against that evidence.
Yeah, it's a fundamental right. Remember, the reason hearsay is generally inadmissible is that you can't cross-examine the person who said it. Exceptions like the excited utterance, they exist because the situation itself is supposed to make the statement trustworthy. But as Cummings shows, that's not always true. And when you don't even know if the person actually saw what they're talking about, that throws the whole thing into question.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I think what really sticks with me, especially with Justice Rivera's opinion, is this. We're learning so much about psychology, about memory. So how does the law adapt to that? How do we deal with these old rules about hearsay, like the excited utterance, when what we know about the brain is changing? It's a balancing act, right? We want to allow evidence that might be important, but we also have to protect the rights of the accused. And that means making sure they have the chance to confront the evidence against them. It's a lot to think about.
It really is. And People v. Cummings is a great example of how complex evidence law can be. It reminds us that we can't just take these old principles for granted. We have to constantly be asking, are these rules still working? Are they fair? Are they getting us closer to the truth? It's a challenge for the legal system, but it's something we have to keep working on.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for joining us for another deep dive.
It's been a pleasure. Until next time.